Cabernet tends to be the sort of Errol Flynn of the grape varieties.
One of Australia's leading beer judges.
People always ask, how do you get involved in sake and how does that connect to music?
Because wine is an adventure.
Conventional winemakers who just condemn all natural wine as faulty.
The prestigious title of Sake Samurai.
Looking at whiskey in more of an artful culinary way.
The difference between getting good quality fresh hops, it just translates straight through into the beer.
This is the Drinks Adventures podcast. I'm James Atkinson, and this is the show where I speak to some of the world's most exciting producers of beer, wine and spirits and uncover trends and issues in the drinks industry today.
That's a lovely shot. Everything is there, the placement and the timing. And that's 50 on debut for Ricky Ponting.
The work of a modern master. 200 for Ricky Ponting.
Well, this is a big moment in the history of Test cricket in Australia. One of the all-time greats makes his way for the last time to the centre of the Wacker. And I think the South Africans appreciate what a great player Ricky Ponting is and has been, the entertainment all around the world.
When I first heard that cricket legend Ricky Ponting was starting his own wine company, I'll admit that my initial reaction was, not another celebrity wine brand. But I subsequently learned that there was much more to Ponting Wines than one of those, shall we say, cynical agreements where a famous person licenses their name and image in exchange for royalties on the resulting sales. On his retirement from Test cricket in 2012, Ricky was gifted 41 bottles of Penfolds Grange by Cricket Australia, one for every Test century he scored in his remarkable career. This certainly helped crystallise an interest in wine that Ricky and his wife Rihanna have since continued to explore in his retirement. Ricky and Rihanna are partners in Ponting Wines, and they see it as a long-term venture that they can maybe one day pass on to their children. And they are working on this project with a very reputable winemaker. Ben Riggs has been in the winemaking game both in Australia and internationally for more than 35 years, initially at renowned McLaren Vale Winery Wirra Wirra, and then later at his own company, Mr. Riggs Wine Co., which he founded in 2001. Ben and the Pontings are working on the project with drinks industry veteran David Krenich, who spent 17 years in commercial and marketing roles at Louis Vuitton Moët Hennessy. And in just a moment, we'll be joined by Ricky and later Ben on the Drinks Adventures podcast.
What I love about Australian craft spirits is that our distillers are truly free to experiment. We aren't governed by rules and traditions. That's why the flavour and character of Australian spirits is so unique. But it takes distilling prowess and another critical ingredient to bring these products to market, and that ingredient is Bintani. Bintani supplies distillers with malts of all colours, flavours and aromas. They have a leading range of yeast and other ingredients and the professional expertise to help distillers create the spirits of their dreams. Make Bintani your partner in taste and quality.
When I spoke to Ricky Ponting, he was in the midst of an ordeal that has become all too familiar to many of us in 2020.
Yeah, well, I'm in hotel quarantine, man. I'm in Sydney. I came back from Dubai from the IPL and I'm at about day 10 or day 11 now of hotel quarantine. So all the Aussie boys are here and plus all the Indians. Guys that came back from the IPL, so I think we've got the whole hotel just to those two groups. I think so. We're separated on across four different floors. I think so. We've got a 3-hour block every day that we sort of have to be out of the hotel at a certain time, have to be back in at a certain time. You obviously, can't come in contact with anyone between the hotel and the training venue, and everything's it's you know, we've got police that are traveling with us and making sure that we're doing everything right. So it's pretty tight.
How are you holding up with quarantine then? Day 11, did you say?
Yeah, I get out Thursday afternoon, I think Thursday night. So, I mean, there was no other alternative. It was come back and be part of this bubble and be able to get out for 3 hours a day with the boys and do some training, or just go back with everybody else and be actually locked in your room for, you know, some of the other guys that travel back, I think they're allowed 20 minutes out a day, I think, to go and just have a bit of a walk around and then come back. So this was certainly the best alternative. But other than today, we've had all morning training sessions. So we're leaving at sort of 8 o'clock and then we're back by 1 o'clock, and then you're just on the couch watching TV until you go to bed. So there's not much to do.
How has 2020 been for you? Did you have any plans that have been derailed by COVID-19?
Yeah, I think it's been a very unusual year for everybody, hasn't it? You know, I had a lot of plans sort of earlier in the year with some of my other commitments, you know, my coaching commitments and stuff. I coach the Delhi Capitals in the IPL, which is normally a tournament that runs sort of April, May, June. That was pushed back until September, October. So I've just arrived back from there about 10 or 11 days ago. You know, obviously the homeschooling thing was something that I didn't cope with very well, let alone having, you know, let alone my kids, you know, the three kids at home. I've got a 6-year-old boy, a 9-year-old girl, and a 12-year-old girl. And as we all know in Melbourne, at stage 4 lockdown, we had a few months where the kids were sort of locked at home doing their schooling. And I learned a fair bit about myself, I think, through that period of time. I know that I could never be a primary school teacher, for one. but it was actually nice, you know, that Rhianna and I actually had you know, the Ponting Wines business on the side that we could dedicate ourselves to and give us something to look forward to through some pretty trying times.
Well, you still managed to launch that business regardless. Has that been held up in any way by the events of this year?
No, not the launch of the business. No, we launched the business in May. So, you know, we've been, the whole business has sort of been in the pipeline for and talking about things for, you know, for a couple of years. So we were able to sort of start moving really quickly on it in sort of October, November last year. And then, yeah, and we launched in May, which was sort of almost right in the middle of probably the strongest stages of lockdown in Victoria. So, I mean, it probably wasn't ideal. It's held us up in a few different ways, but in other ways it was ideal. You know, it seemed like more people were staying home and probably drinking a little bit more through that period of time, which was ended up being a nice time to launch the brand. So, you know, it's been the whole brand and the business has been received really well. I think we've had over 70,000 visitors to the Ponting Wines website, which has been terrific. So it's you know, the pickups from the independent retailers have been really strong. So yeah, everything's been good. And as I said, just for Rhianna and I to have something to focus on through those times was probably the most pleasing aspect of it as well.
Well, could you take me back to that, you know, that first moment that this idea came to you and David and Ben, or maybe how you guys met and how this was conceived initially?
Yeah, well, I've known David for a long time, actually. David and I have probably known each other 6 or 7 years. We sort of used to bump into each other around the racing carnival time sort of in Melbourne every year and, you know, we'll be hanging out in different venues and different marquees and things. And that was back to his Mowat Hennessy days, obviously, and we'd always stayed in close contact. And then yeah, it was, as I said, sort of October last year where just a call out of the blue from him came and said, oh, look, what do you think about launching your own, having your own wine label? I'd never thought about it ever before, to be honest. I've all, you know, the last 10 or 15 years, I guess, you know, the back end of my playing career and certainly the 6 or 7 years that I've been retired from playing, you know, wine's become a much bigger part of my life and certainly a bigger part of Rhianna's life as well. So I had a thought, think about it for a while, and then I spoke to Rhianna about it, and we thought, yeah, let's why not? You know, I knew David's credentials and his expertise in the industry, and you know, the next step then was to try and align ourselves with the right people, and no better winemaker than Ben Riggs. So it all came together quite quickly, you know, and then before I knew it, I was over down in Tasmania, and I was over in McLaren Vale with Ben, and we were going through the different varietals and everything that we were going to launch in the range. So it's yeah, it's been a really good journey so far.
And, you know, you mentioned that wine's become a bigger part of your life in retirement. Did you get much exposure to wine at all during your playing career?
Yeah, a little bit of exposure during my playing career, but, you know, it's a long way from my background, if you like. So growing up in Northern Tasmania and, you know, housing commission homes and stuff, wine was never really a big part of our lives. It was, you know, mum and dad would have a beer and a barbie sort of. That was the way that I was sort of brought up, and it wasn't until, you know, probably my mid-20s really, where I was, you know, around the Aussie team and around a few more sort of senior players that like to have a glass of wine at the end of a day's play or after a test match rather than, you know, 15 or 20 beers. And then, yeah, that was rare. Probably I sort of was introduced to it, you know. And then when I met my wife, Rhianna, and I have been together for nearly 20 years now, 18, 19 years, and she was a wine drinker. So that was sort of my introduction to wine, if you like, and to learn more about it and to be around a lot of people that know more about wine and the industry than I do was certainly a real eye-opener. And to this day, you know, even every time that I'm sitting on a call talking to Ben or sitting face-to-face talking to Ben, just learning more about wine's been awesome. So I never thought I'd be sitting here with my own label, but, yeah, we're really proud of the way it's come together.
You mentioned that, you know, maybe there were some other players that did enjoy a glass of wine in the dressing room instead of a beer. Can you divulge any of who they would have been that maybe had a bit of an influence on you in those early years? I mean, obviously, Stuart McGill's one name that comes to mind as being a bit of a wine lover.
Yeah, absolutely. He was always the first one to crack a bottle of wine at the end of a day's play rather than sitting around the esky full of beers. But I think it was probably a lot more of the senior guys. I mean, everyone would come off and grab a beer straight away and sit around and have a chat and talk about the game. But, you know, guys like Mark Taylor and Steve Waugh and some of those sort of more senior guys that were probably a little, you'd like to say, a little more rounded in the way, with their palates and what they thought at the end of a day's play rather than just us young blokes that had come off and grab a beer straight away. But yeah, it was more those sort of senior guys and even some of the staff. You know, physio Errol Orcott at the time was a wine lover. So, you know, inevitably, if you went out for the big team dinners that we used to have, you know, before a series or a team dinner before a big test match or something, then there'd always be wine around the tables. And that was sort of where my introduction came.
What about since retirement? You know, were there any particularly memorable experiences that really got you more seriously interested in wine?
I can't really ever put my finger on anything. I think it was probably, you know, Rihanna and I, you know, we're very private people. We like getting out and about and going to nice restaurants and having nice food and wine. So that's probably as much as where it started as anything, I guess. We used to get looked after really well in Adelaide as well. We'd quite often get invites out to McGill Estate for a lunch or a wine tasting and things like that out there. So it's certainly becoming, you know, a bigger part of even cricket, I guess, you know, and what Rihanna and I will tend to do now, if we get a chance to go out in the holidays or in summer or even in the wintertime, we'll always look to go to a winery and have lunch. You know, some of the restaurants and things around wineries now around, certainly around Victoria are outstanding and even come with some of the trips that we had down to Tassie to get our wines right down there to sit around some of the magnificent wineries down there and have some beautiful food and lunch was, you know, it's just become a big part of what Rihanna and I do and what we like to do. So
what are some of your favourite varieties and regions and wine styles? Are you and Rihanna generally drinking Australian wine when you're at home, or are you sort of trying to experience some of the wines of the world as well?
Yeah, I think it's probably a 70-30 split, I'd say, if you sort of put me on the spot with that. We drink a lot of Australian wine, you know, dabbled a little bit in some of the New Zealand wines as well and some French wine, but it'd probably be more than that. It'd probably be 80-20%. I really enjoy experiencing the different regions in Australia, you know, and even thinking about the lineup that we've got and having the Pinot and the Chardonnay out of Northern Tasmania and, you know, the Shiraz from McLaren Vale and the Cab Sav from Langhorne Creek. You know, we've got some really premium wines out of some premium areas, and they're the sort of things that I like, you know, enjoy. Even, you know, Western Australian Margaret River sort of regions as well. We've had, you know, a lot of, you know, Gilly and Damien Martin and those guys spend a lot of time in those regions, and we're always talking about wines from those areas. So I would say that, you know, I'm pretty loyal as well. I think if I'm going to be buying a bottle of wine, I'd rather the money be going here in Australia than offshore somewhere.
Tell me the story about the Grange that you got from Cricket Australia when you finished up your career.
Well, that just probably goes to highlight to you, James, exactly what I'm talking about, how wine was becoming more of a part of my life. And I think the players and I think Cricket Australia probably picked up on it that I was turning into quite the wine lover. So, yeah, at the end of my career, obviously, I decided that I was going to retire after a Perth test match against South Africa, and everything happened quite quickly. You know, leading up to that game, I'd sort of announced the day before the game or 2 days before the game to the boys that it was going to be my last test match. And not sure how they came up with the idea or the plan, but what I was gifted just blew me away. So as it turns out, I was gifted a bottle of Grange for every test century that I scored. So I got 41 bottles of Grange at the end of my career. So it was for every 100 that I scored. So if I say I scored five in 2004, then I got five 2004 vintage. If I got, you know, so that was sort of the way it worked out. And it was a pretty amazing gift. So there was 41 of them. I can quite happily say that there's nowhere near 41 of them still in my cellar. I've been able to work my way through a few of them and been able to share with mates and teammates and that as well through the years. So it was just an amazing gift. And I actually had my retirement party at Adam Gilchrist's house, actually, because he lives in Perth, and we were actually comparing our retirement gifts. He got about a 4-inch tall little Tiffany alarm clock that he sits next to his bed, and I got 41 bottles of Grange. So I think I might have come out on top there.
I think you landed on your feet for sure. now, tell me about your cellar. I mean, if you didn't have a cellar before then, you would have had to do something about storing those wines at that point.
Yeah, and I've actually moved. I moved house in between as well. So when I retired, I was living in Sydney, and then soon after we moved to Melbourne. So the first thing I did when I moved to Melbourne was made sure that I upgraded the cellar there. So we've got a fully refrigerated cellar now in Melbourne. Only a small one, but probably holds. Or when I say small, it probably holds 200 or 300 bottles, I guess. So most of it's in there now is from our range, and obviously with the scattering of the grange around it. So it's and it's through COVID, especially. I haven't been home for 3 months, but when I was at home through the COVID period, the cellar was quite frequently being visited. So I don't think anything's going to change over the next week when I get home either.
Absolutely. Now, I've previously had on this podcast Sir Ian Botham to talk about his wines and actor Sam Neill to talk about his wines. And one of the things that came up in both those conversations was that, you know, they felt a bit of frustration that there was this sort of, you know, people were a bit dismissive of their wines as being, you know, just a celebrity wine venture. Is that sort of something that you were, you know, conscious of going into this just to make sure the wines were really top quality or it wouldn't be taken seriously?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was very aware of that. You know, actually, only a few months before this idea actually came from David, I'd spent a lot of time in the UK with Ian Botham. We'd commentated the Ashes together, and almost on a daily basis, he was having his own wine sent into the back of the commentary box so we could have a glass of wine at the end of every day's play. So, look, I was aware of a lot of the negativity around it, but that's why Rihanna and I have decided to be as heavily involved as we have. You know, we're not just putting our name on the label. You know, we're heavily involved in the day-to-day running of everything, and Ben can back me up there. You know, as far right from, you know, the blending of the wines down in Tasmania to all the finer detail on the labeling and the bottling and everything was exactly the way that we wanted it to be. You know, and it's, you know, when you sit there and you look at the bottle and the brand, it's got, you know, our family name front and center across the middle of the bottle. If we ever do anything, we want to be 100% invested in what we're doing, and that's the way we've gone about it this time. As I said earlier, you know, the whole premise from this was that I wanted it to be a premium brand. I wanted to have premium wines, and hence getting, you know, one of Australia's best winemakers to make our wine for us, and we're getting the wine out of premium regions of Australia. So yeah, so we're fully invested. As I said, it's a day-to-day thing for us. You know, we're continually trying to find ways to improve the brand and looking at ways to grow the brand. So, you know, once I get my feet back on the ground now back in Melbourne for the next few months, and Rihanna and I can be face to face, we can start working extra hard on the brand again.
Now, when you actually sat down with Ben and David and got serious about building this brand, tell me about the sort of conversations you were having then as to whether, you know, maybe it could have been a Tasmanian brand only, but you've ended up going with a multi-regional approach. What were the sort of discussions that went on there?
Yeah, look, a really big part of what we were talking about was, you know, I wanted to be able to tell a story through the range as well. And I think that's what's come up particularly well as far as I'm concerned anyway, with having the two Tasmanian wines there, you know, obviously the Pinot Noir and the Chardonnay. It gives me a chance to talk about my upbringing and my background and where I came from. And also, you know, it shows, I guess, to people that I'm still very conscious of where I came from and where I grew up. And then obviously with Ben being our winemaker and him knowing, you know, obviously McLaren Vale and South Australian region so well, you know, it was really important for us to have a Shiraz in the lineup and obviously a Cab Sav. And we've added the Adelaide Hill Sauvignon Blanc only, you know, over the last few months. So, you know, it was about varieties of wine that we wanted to have, or varieties of wine that we wanted to have in the lineup, but also being able to tell the story through it. And, you know, you can see with the labeling, and, you know, that the green and gold is a bit of the, you know, the baggy green sort of green. And so telling a story about my cricket, but also my life growing up in Tassie as well, was important to us. So, and you know, I think it's come together really well, you know, and even with our icon wine that is about to hit the markets now, you know, the 366, the way that we've been able to package all of that up and the quality of wine in that bottle and, you know, the labelling and the packaging and everything that's comes along with that just makes me and Rihanna exceptionally proud.
What were the discussions around that wine? You've gone with the Shiraz Cabernet blend, which is quite, it's sort of coming back into fashion at the moment.
Yeah, oh, well, quintessential Australian blend, isn't it? And, well, the actual wine in itself is magnificent. I'm really excited about how this is going to be received, to be honest. You know, right down to the, you know, the quality of the wine, but just the way it's packaged and the way it looks is ultra exciting. So, once again, the regions with McLaren Vale and Coonawarra being able to bring those together, I think anyone that sees it and then certainly tastes the wine is going to be very, very happy, I'm sure.
Has there ever been any talk about, you know, buying a vineyard or having a physical presence for the brand anywhere?
We haven't talked about that yet, but that'll be part of the growth. You know, as I said, we'll make sure we do whatever we can to establish and...
Sorry, can you guys hear me now?
We were joined on the call at this point by winemaker Ben Riggs.
I was just going to answer at the beginning, you were talking about Tasmania, and I think one of the issues is if it was just focused on Tasmania, it would have been a bit lacking accessibility to a lot of people because Tasmania is a very expensive place to grow grapes and the wines are not cheap. And I think broadening it also gave more people an opportunity to try the wines.
Yeah, and Ben, maybe go back to, you know, when you first got approached with this idea. What was your reaction?
You know, it all sort of made sense. I mean, you know, Ricky and Rana are very interested in the industry and the products. And, you know, Ricky came to visit me in the vineyard and the house. And, you know, I think we have very similar attitude to things, to do things properly. I've been in the game since I was 16 years old and I realise it's not exactly a way that anyone's going to make lots of money. And I think I love the way that Ricky's idea was to have something that's left to the next generation and beyond. And that's certainly how I viewed my business. You know, I was chatting with a couple of mates who've been in the game, you know, third and fourth generation. And they all say, I don't know how the hell you can even think about starting from scratch. Because it's a tough game. I guess I've always viewed a band of acceptable quality. And I always want to be somewhere near the top of the band, but never below the band of acceptable quality. And I think that comes coupled with the fact that you want people to want another glass, another bottle. You want to make wines that people enjoy drinking, wines that have ability to age. But I think it's important that people, it's a great drink that people enjoy while they're drinking it, not something that's hard work. And I think Ricky, you know, certainly agrees with that concept. We don't want to make things that are unapproachable and over the top in style in any way.
And what was the sort of overarching wine style that you decided on for the range? You know, was that something that you all discussed apart from that approachability? I mean, is that approachability something that's in your winemaking style anyway, I would have thought?
Well, it's a work in progress. I mean, this thing has only been going for a short period of time. And with the Tasmanian stuff, you know, we spent time together tasting. It was hard, especially as COVID hit, to do that with the other wine styles. But now as we move forward and Ricky will be back in town for a while, hopefully in the new year we can all get together and spend some time again on the tasting bench. One swallow doesn't maketh the summer is the saying. And I think the first wines I think have hit the spot as far as, you know, I think they're high quality, they've got some good scores, they're certainly drinkable. People are certainly coming back for more. But I think we'll evolve those styles, you know, as customers communicate with us what they like and also Ricky and Rihanna give more feedback about what they want to represent their name.
And you would have obviously had some pretty good contacts around the place from, you know, where to source fruit?
Well, the only tricky one was Tasmania, really. You know, all the around here, I've worked with a lot of people for a long time and know, you know, the Adelaide Hills and McLaren Vale, Langholm Creek, et cetera, pretty well. But, yeah, Tasmania, and that was another thing that was exciting for me is to be able to get to Tasmania and play with some of the wines there. And that's something I really look forward to having more and more time and energy spent on what we're doing in Tasmania. And hopefully we can get it to the point that you were saying before about purchasing things like vineyard. I think the place to do that would be Tasmania more than around here because there's a lot more places here to source great fruit from, whereas Tasmania is a bit more closed.
There wasn't much around at the Tassie Pinot because it's been gone, I understand.
It was funny, you know, we were tossing up how much we should bottle. We should have gone, should have bottled a bit more. I think our number one customer for that's been Tex Walker.
Right.
Apart from Ricky. Tex is a huge fan.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in fact, I ran into a bloke recently and he said, now, that's right, Tex told me I've got to buy Ricky's Pinot. I said, too late.
Yeah, so the Pinot, the 2017 Shiraz and the 2018 Langhorn Creek, they've all sold out on our website. So, that, I mean, they're still available through a lot of the retailers and stuff, but they're obviously sold out. So we've been delighted how things have gone to date.
And James, what I was saying before about text, it's certainly followed with a lot of people. The wines have been very well received. I mean, David Krinich, who's our partner in this, who's an exceptionally good salesperson, he doesn't let people say no very often, but there hasn't been too many people that have said no. There's been some, I think you touched on it before, there's been a little bit of pushback from people thinking it's a celebrity brand. And once they taste the wines and they look at the effort that's gone into it, they always bought it because they realise that we're deadly serious about it. It's nothing to do with celebrity. It's to do with someone who's interested in creating a business and a wine brand.
Now, tell me about the 366 from your point of view, a Shiraz Cabernet blend. We've actually talked about, you know, the Great Australian Red, as some people are calling it a lot on this podcast. And I think probably Barossa, Shiraz, Coonawarra Cabernet is a combination I've seen a lot of. Does McLaren Vale and Coonawarra for the same sort of varietal blend offer up a similar sort of recipe, or how does it sort of differ than having Barossa as the dominant region in your blend?
What is this thing called Barossa, you say? For me, it has to be, you know, this is all to do with cricket and Ricky's career, and tradition is everything in cricket. And for me, when I started making wine and being interested in wine, the traditional Australian claret was always a Shiraz Cabernet, Cabernet Shiraz. They were always, well, not always, but pretty frequently inter-regional, inter-varietal blends. And so I think, you know, if we're going to go tradition and with a wine with Ricky's test career, you know, test cap on it, it had to be traditional Australian blend. I guess, you know, to go back into a bit of history, when I came to McLaren Vale in the late 80s, the only big company in McLaren Vale was Hardy's, and I don't think had any wines with McLaren Vale on label. And we were really used as a place that people would buy bulk wine and blend a lot. Guys like Greg Trott, Cud Kay, Darry Osborne, all the old guys would say to me that McLaren Vale is the middle palate of Australia. When I was at Wirrawirra, a large part of what I did was shipping bulk wine to the Hunter, Chardonnay and Shiraz, that they would blend in their own wines. And in the early 90s, Truth in Labelling came in and you had to say where it came from, which meant that all of a sudden there were labels with McLaren Vale written on them that it wasn't written before. So it's a very traditional blend. I would like to have used some Barossa material. I think that would have taken the next step as well. I just really couldn't find anything that was worthy of this blend. You know, the idea is elegant style, structure. You know, it's not supposed to taste like McLaren Vale or Coonawarra or Shiraz or Cabernet. It's supposed to be a combination of a lot. Now, I fiddle around with bits and pieces of other material, but I think I was most happy where we got to with this.
Ben, any other wines in the range that you want to talk to specifically that you're particularly, pleased with?
Well, I mean, the Pinot's been great. With the Chardonnay, which I think we're about to release soon, which I think it will be excellent, just needs time. And Chardonnay is such a conundrum because it needs time. You know, like if people want rich, complex Chardonnay, it's got a bottle age. And so it just needs time. But I think that wine, when it hits its straps, will be delicious. You know, being from McLaren Vale, you know, I really love what we do in this part of the world. You know, the 17 and 18 McLaren Vale Shiraz, you know, soft and spicy and juicy and lovely drinks, but given time will keep evolving with lovely tannin structure and complexity. They're not in any way, shape or form simple wines, but they're very drinkable and, it's the sort of style I've been working on for a long time and I enjoy. And I think probably the one that surprises most people is the Cabernet from Langholm Creek. You know, Langholm Creek is another area that suffered from being a widely blended region without having enough wines with its name on. And I think some of the best Cabernets, you know, when I first worked in the industry, John Glatzer was a blast, and John, you know, built his reputation on Langholm Creek Cabernet, you know, wonderfully complex and structured wines from Langholm Creek. And I think that one's probably the surprise from people. I think it's the one they least expect something from, and often people enjoy it a lot.
Now, Ben, have you had Ricky with you getting his hands dirty in the winery throughout this journey at all?
Only on the tasting bench, but hopefully there's time and we don't have any more problems with this silly COVID thing and he finds a window sort of February, March, and we can track him a couple of fermenters and make him purple.
I might be over there earlier than that. I might be over for the test match in...
Yeah, I can't get the grapes ready then, though, Ricky.
Right. Well, that's good. That means I can't do any work. So I'm happy to come out of McLaren Vale in December, but not in March.
Ricky, have you got a kick out of actually, you know, being in the winery and kind of seeing the, you know, the craft that that Ben's applying?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the day that I had with Ben in McLaren Vale was awesome. You know, we walked up and down through the vineyards and talked a lot about the history of his place and the history of the whole region, to be honest. And for me, it's, you know, I'm learning along the way, learning on a daily basis and listening to someone like Ben talk about regions and conditions and grapes and growth and all, you know, that sort of stuff was outstanding. And we did a similar thing down in Tasmania when we went down there as well. So, yeah, I mean, I was having a joke then about being over in Adelaide in December, but that's something I'd absolutely love to do more, is to spend more time around the vineyards and more time around the wineries and learn a lot more about the whole process, and no better man to be spending the time with than Ben.
We'll get there. And James, I got to tell you, when Ricky was in the winery, one of the visits, he signed one of my puncheons, and on the Monday, I had one of the guys from the cellar come walk into the tasting room and said, "Is that Ricky Ponting's signature on your barrel?" He was like, "This look, it's like, but yeah, would expect." He was very impressed.
Now, Ricky, as I said, if you don't mind, I'm just interested to get your thoughts on what the Australian team's prospects are coming into summer for the Test Series.
Yeah, look, I think their prospects are really good. You know, the number one ranked Test team in the world at the moment, you know, coming up against a very good Indian team as well that actually beat Australia out here last time they met. But if you remember back to that series, David Warner and Stephen Smith weren't there and India got things pretty much their own way. I don't think that'll happen this time around. All in all, I mean, the rivalry now between India and Australia is almost as strong as it is between Australia and England. So anytime there's test matches played between these two teams or these two countries, you can guarantee that there's one, it's going to be, you know, a really high level of skill because they're two very, very good teams. But there's just always that little bit of added niggle, if you like, between them. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to the first test coming around. It's in Adelaide, as I said, a pink ball test in Adelaide to kick things off, and it should be a great summer of test cricket.
They'll be without Kohli for some of the tests. That's probably going to hamper them a fair bit.
Yeah, he'll play the three one-dayers, the three T20s and the first test match, and then we'll head back home for the birth of his first child. So, look, that's a huge loss for them. Obviously, being their captain and you know, one of the best players in the world, you know, any team is going to miss that sort of experience and that sort of class. So, you know, it leaves a few holes. They need to find a number four batsman. They need to find someone's going to step up and do the captaincy and do it well for them. So, I think that's where a really good opportunity is presented for Australia in those last three test matches.
Well, Ben and Ricky, it's been really great chatting to you both, and best of luck with Ponting Wines. And I look forward to trying the wines and future vintages and seeing how it all evolves.
Good on you, James. Hi, mate.
Well, that brings us to the end of Season 7 of Drinks Adventures and the end of the show for 2020. I really want to thank everyone for tuning in and supporting the podcast this year. And if you really want to help us out, just a reminder to please drop us a review and a rating wherever you listen to the show. Thanks to Tim Bovino, who had this to say on Apple Podcasts. James, thanks for the great podcast. I regularly listen to it on my morning walk during lockdown. It's a great way of staying connected with fascinating people and topics discussed in your down-to-earth manner. Cheers for that, Tim. There's a couple of big stories this week on the podcast website, drinksadventures.com.au. I interviewed Archie Rose founder Will Edwards about his company's individual malt stream method of whiskey production, which they've been able to patent, surprising a lot of people and causing a bit of a stink with some of their distilling peers. So that's definitely going to be an interesting story to watch in 2021. Until then, have a great Christmas and a happy new year, and let's hope 2021 is a better year for all of us. It couldn't be worse, right? Take care, and I look forward to having you join us again after we have a much-needed break. The Drinks Adventures podcast is produced by me, James Atkinson, with additional production and mixing by Dave Robertson. You can find complete transcripts, links, and other information on the show at drinksadventures.com.au. You can follow me on all social media platforms at By James Atkinson. Like my Facebook page, James Atkinson Drinks Adventures, to be kept informed of podcast giveaways and other news about the show. The Drinks Adventures podcast needs your support as listeners. Please do us a favour and leave an honest review and rating for the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. We love hearing your feedback, and it helps inform other people this is a show worth listening to. Or simply drop us a line at hello@drinksadventures.com.au.